This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and risk tolerances. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the April 13th edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. And of course, we're here to help. We're here to help you break through the barriers of the average investor, which is a pretty tough barrier to break. You got to make decisions. You know, if you try to make decisions without good information and let emotions direct you on what you buy and sell and when you buy and sell it, you're going to lose money. You need better information. Okay, we all do. I need better information. I wish I could have perfect information, but you don't. But you continually learn and gather more information and learn how to do it. It takes time. Familiarity with the fundamentals is a key component to a successful strategy. Do you know how you are invested? Do you know how you're invested? And that's going to be one of our talking points today. Now, we talk a lot about investment risk here on Invest Talk. Risk. You know, probably you're bored with it because managing is really our first priority. It should be yours too. Managing your risk of whatever you're investing in. So, of course, we have a free risk analysis tool that determines your risk level, your comfort level in taking risk. But that really is not, that we're talking about a little different forms of risk, different an investment kind of risk, types of risk when in the marketplace. At first, the market risk is number one. This is the risk that the asset you're holding, whatever asset is, will go up and down with the market. There's an old saying that rising tides lift all boats, and that means if the market's going up, you usually go up with it. If it goes down, you go down with it. That's the market risk. That's what we call market risk. Then there's the event risk, and of course, that is a risk of a certain event, a specific event will cause the value of your holdings or your stock to go up or down, and many times, you know, earnings is one of the main event risks that you have. Earnings, corporate earnings. If they have blowout numbers, the value of stock goes up. The third one is default risk, and that is primarily dealing with bonds. You know, where the corporate issuer of the bonds decides to not pay you your interest rate. They ran out of money or whatever it is. Default risk. And then finally, there's the exchange risk. Currency exchange risk. You know, if you buy an asset outside the United States, you think you're making money because it keeps going up, may not be once you translate it into U.S. dollars, and vice versa, by the way. So you got the currency risk of things if you buy foreign stocks. So those are some. Do you have questions about measuring risk or what kind of risk there are? There are a lot more risks. They're not the only ones. They are just the main ones I'm just talking about. You can call right now to our Invest Talk listener line, 888-99-CHART. We're live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. So we're live right now. But you can always call anytime, 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Linda. I would like your opinion regarding the rationale of buying individual stocks or buying mutual fund. Considering all the expenses or commission involved in this transaction, I know that individual stocks require more personal attention and analysis. With regard to a mutual fund, there is an expense ratio if it is a no-load fund. I would like to know your opinion on this subject. Thank you so much.
Well, if you buy individual stocks and you just hold them, you don't have ongoing costs. Whereas a mutual fund, the expense ratio is every year, year after year after year after year. Depends on what kind of investor you are. If you're very knowledgeable, you're going to want individual stocks, and you can do better than most mutual funds. Remember, the most mutual funds, if you're talking about a broad-based mutual fund, they own hundreds of shares, hundreds of different kinds of companies. They own so many that they become their own index. It's not really helping you. You're not You know, you might as well buy just an index fund and just ignore and keep it. But if you buy, you know, 20, 30, I like about 30, 35 stocks. If you buy that many, you can be a bit more focused and yet still have proper diversification. And, you know, the trading costs are so small, and sometimes no trading costs at all, that, you know, it would behoove you to consider buying stocks. The problem is most people don't have the knowledge or the data to do the research needed to buy individual stocks. So you might as well buy a mutual fund or an ETF. ETF if you just want to buy an index, because they're not managed. But a mutual fund is managed. 80%+ of all mutual funds underperform their index. So you got to find the good ones. Find the good ones. Familiarity with fundamentals is a key component to a successful strategy. Do you know how you're invested? That's one of our main talking points today. Also, I want to discuss the first 100 days of the Trump presidency and how that shapes up, stacks up against other first 100 days of presidents. Do you think he's done well or bad? And that's just referring to the stock market, which is really just a fun stat, not a meaningful stat, because, you know, what does a president do in first 100 days? Not a lot. Doesn't affect the economy, but it's interesting. Also, the stock market, if you are a market watcher like I am, you know that it's been stuck in a range, or stuck in a mode of slowly going down. Something has to change, and this is the something I think that has to happen. Because now we're going to go into detail. So something has to change, and it's just slowly leaking down since March 1st. And finally, five things that prove rich people are cheap. Remember, I was going to do this the day before yesterday, and I didn't get to it. I had a couple emails. People wanted me to talk about that, so I'll talk about it. I'll get to it today, I promise. So that's what we're going to talk about. What do you want to talk about, though? The market was down 139 points for the Dow today, 16 points for was it NASDAQ down 16, or was it the S&P that's down 16? Yeah, the S&P was down 16, so the NASDAQ was down 31. So it was a more than normal volatile down day that we've seen. It seems like we have a few days where it's nothing, and then a big down day or a big up day. Did you notice that? But I'm just saying, overall, well, even today, the S&P broke below its 50-day moving average, and that was kind of a line in the sand. Oh, it's got to hold this, you know, and it broke it down. Well, I'm not going to count that as that impactful, since tomorrow's a holiday, long weekend. A lot of people don't want to hold positions over the weekend, so we're going to have to wait till Monday. We'll see if it recovers that 50-day moving average. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What can we talk about today? What is really important to you? We're talking about stocks, bonds, anything financial. But what's really important to you financial? My line is open, 888-99-CHART. It's a live listener line every weekday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Tina in Redwood City. How you doing, Tina?
Good. Hi, Steve. I have a question. What do you think about
the
stock CCP?
You want to buy it, or, you know, how did it come?
Buying because of high dividends.
Okay. So this is a REIT. You know what a REIT is, right? Or do you? Real Estate Investment Trust? Okay, it's a REIT, everybody, that acquires, owns, and leases skilled nursing facilities and other healthcare assets across 36 states. So I like that sector, Rita, because I think old people like me are just going to use those kind of facilities more and more and more and more. So I like the sector. This is a $2.3 billion company, so it's a small cap company, but, you know, not really, really tiny. They're going to make $2.83 this year. Now, that's down from $3.05 last year and $3.42 a year before. So it has a little slightly downward trend, except it's going to allegedly reverse it next year. Let's hope it does. And it's going to make $2.91. That means it's about a 9 PE. Okay, 9. And you'll say, hey, that's pretty low. That's pretty low. Well, don't get too excited because its 5-year average is pretty narrow, 7 to 11, and 9 is right in the middle. So it's not, for this stock, is not that cheap. Compare it to the overall market, it's pretty reasonable, pretty inexpensive. It pays an 8.3% dividend. It's a $27 stock, so 8% of $27 is $1.90. So they can easily pay its dividend. Remember, as I read, it has to pay 90% out of its 90% of its income out in a dividend. So if it can keep up what it's doing, and I think it probably can, your dividends will be relatively safe. I say relatively because, you know, how safe is any dividend from any company? And this is a small cap company. They make, so their dividends are riskier, but it has the earnings and the sales growth, which is in the single digits, to maintain their dividend. So Tina, if that's what you want it for, it looks like a pretty good dividend and solid. Okay?
And what entry point would you get?
Okay. Now, if you're looking at a chart, now, so everybody, we just talked about fundamentals. Now I'm going to the technical. So looking at a chart, it broke below its 20-day, it broke below its 50-day moving average. Wait a minute. Nope. I'm looking at the wrong chart because I'm old. There it is. Okay. So forget everything I just told you. It's moved up off its bottom in November and kept rising. It's moved up quite sharply. I wouldn't buy it now because it's at $27.43, it's right, which is a lot of resistance between $27 and $29. So it's right at its resistance point. If life was good, I'd really like to buy this right around $25, $25.50, because that's where a lot of moving averages converge. The 100-day and the 200-day moving average. I think that's a good spot if it goes down there. Okay?
Okay. Thanks, Tina. All right. Well, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Chase in New York. How are you doing, Chase?
Hey, good, Steve. Thank you. I wanted to ask you about Sibanye Gold, SBGL. Reason I'm asking is because it looks like precious metals are kind of firming up or maybe getting some legs, and this company in particular, it looks like it's a decent valuation. Maybe you have a better idea, but it also pays a nice dividend, and they had some like deals and things that they had like an acquisition with Stillwater Mining, I think, that's supposed to be going through or something towards the end of the month, and I didn't know. That was the kind of thing where I didn't know if it was like risky or not, you know, how,
well, it is kind of,
I thought if it went, you know,
it is kind of risky. It is kind of because it's a $2.2 billion acquisition, all cash. So they have to cough up $2.2 billion and it's only a It's a $24 billion company. So it can do it because that's about 10% of its market cap.
Right.
So it should be able to do it. I'm going to have to pick this up after the break. I'm sorry, I'm getting up against a hard break. So hold on. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Love to hear from you right now. So Chase, I hope it's still there, but I didn't finish up. So are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay. So Sabine Gold, they're buying, you know, $2.2 billion in cash, Stillwater Mining Company, and that's about 10% of their market cap, which means actually 2.4. So that means that, you know, it's kind of expensive for them, but they can do it. It's doable for them. But it I don't know how good you want to look at Stillwater and see how good that company. Meanwhile, Sabine is doing quite well. Earnings are going to jump up 96 cents next year after a loss this year. I wonder if that loss looks like it includes the purchase. I don't know. Sales, though, have increased sharply. 50% increase in the most recent two quarters. So You know, you buy this because of gold. What do you think gold going? We own a number of gold stocks ourselves and at one of our managed accounts, gold mining stocks. We don't own this one. So I'm kind of positive on gold for the short term. I kind of am. Okay? Appreciate call, Chase. Thank you. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Sandish in Boston. How you doing, Sandish?
Hi, Steve. I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Yep. So I just have a very basic question. I just want to know how the life of a day traders. So how they get their income? So they do a lot of buying or selling every day, or they get income by the dividends or the profits. So I just want to know how is that they make living by trading.
Okay, well, they don't do it by the dividends, that's for sure, because you have to own the stock by the end of the day when the ex-dividend date. So they don't make anything by dividends. A day trader, is simply as you described. A day trader makes his money by the increase in prices of that stock in that day. So let's say he buys it at $22.20, and he buys 500 shares in the morning. He sells sometime a few hours later, and it goes up a nickel. So he made 5 cents per share of those 500 shares. That's that's how a day trader makes money.
Oh, okay.
So,
that is the only
way. Now, if it goes down, he just lost money. Day trading is a very risky thing, and most people lose most of their money day trading. It's not a good thing for... It's not a good skill to master because it's so hard. Okay?
Yeah. Got it. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for the question, Tendish. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. A lot of people don't know the makeup of their portfolio. Now, of course, they know what they own. I'm not saying that. Yeah, they know. I own Apple, and then I own GE, and I own this mutual fund, and I own... But they don't really understand the makeup. Do you have... What kind of portfolio is it? Is it geared for growth? Is it geared to be balanced? Is it geared to be defensive? Is it a dividend-paying type income-producing portfolio? Do you have a proper balance of all the things that you want to achieve what the goal was? Most people have no clue of that. And it's something you really need to know. So the first question you ask yourself, what kind of investor do I want to be? Do I want to be the guy that makes a lot of money because I just want to count? You ask everybody. Everybody's going to say, I want to make money. Well, of course everybody wants to make money. But in the stock market, there's many different ways to do it. And if you don't understand the makeup of your portfolio and how it's going to achieve that, then you're not going to make money. It's not going to happen. Most people pick stocks like, well, gee, I like this stock. A Tesla, it's in the news and they make a lot of money. I'm going to buy that one. Apple, I like their phones. I'm going to buy that one. And that's how they make up a portfolio. And it's a bunch of jumbled stuff that they don't know I can't tell you where they're going. I've seen a lot of these. So you really want to first understand what you're trying to achieve besides the answer, I want to make money. Maybe your goal is to have some growth, but I'm focused on income. I want dividends. I want income coming in on this. Okay. So then you're looking at an income portfolio. Now, how do you want to produce it? You want to produce that income with dividends or bond yields? How safe do you want? How much risk do you want to take in that portfolio to get those dividends? Do you want just big blue chip stocks that pay high dividends and always grow their dividends? Or maybe you want to take a lot of risk and you're not interested in dividends at all. You want pure growth. I want growth. I want lots of risk because I want lots of reward. And I understand that it's going to be volatile. See, this is what I mean when you have to decide. You have to decide what kind of investor you want to be. Then build a portfolio that has the proper risk equation to achieve that goal of yours. I know it's nebulous, but it's important. We're at the halfway mark already this Thursday, everybody. Right now, let's hear from you. Well, I want to hear your money questions. 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach InvestTalk right now. Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial. KPP offers 5 individual programs to match up with various life situations, including those invested in their employer's 401k program. These programs vary in design and purpose, from aggressive for those looking for optimum growth to those designed to keep risk at an absolute minimum. And at KPP Financial, you can be assured that they're investing their own money in the same programs. Parallel investing is your assurance of their continuous vigilance. When you're ready to learn more about any of these programs, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab. And now we continue with the podcast. Invest Talk continues, and next time, there are more important things than chasing returns. There's a real power in having a plan. Powerful ways to boost 401k returns in 2017. That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. You set the topic right now. Call us at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Spencer in Colorado. How you doing, Spencer?
Good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. I appreciate the call.
Hey, I'm looking to get your thoughts on ticker MGM. Obviously, it's a casino company. And also your thoughts on the valuation.
Okay. It's interesting that, I don't know if you know this, but they're going to acquire 49% interest in Viacom and a 31% interest in Longsgate for about $1 billion.
I did not know that.
Yeah, for $1 billion. So that's a big, big purchase. It's going to affect them, you know, their bottom line. It will, good or bad. I just don't know because I don't know much about either one of those companies. But as I'm looking at MGM, they're looking pretty good. Their earnings for this year is going to go up 14% to $1.22 a share. Next year, up another 27% to $1.56. Sales are increasing finally after falling for almost 2 years. In the last 2 quarters, they turned around and started growing again. They have a lot of debt, and you know this purchase that they're making. You want to kind of know what that's going to do to their debt level, and I'm sure they're going to be able to handle it, but it's going to affect them and my valuation of them because that's a big purchase. Without it, I would say it looks pretty good, and it's not that expensive. Compared to its 5-year PE range, you know, the PE is like 26, and that's like 30% higher than the S&P, which is already high. But for them, their low PE is only 22, so they've always had a high PE, you know. So I like the company. It just, you'd have to check out that purchase and see how that's going to affect the bottom line. I just can't tell you that. Spencer, appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Noel in Napa. How you doing, Noel?
Real good, Steve. Good to hear from you. Thanks for picking up. I was interested in Ford.
Okay.
Thought I'd see what you thought of it. It's not a barn burner right now, but it's close since the market's a little on the weak side lately. It's down to about close to 11.
Right.
I put in a limit order for 11. This morning, but I could change my mind. I guess the one thing I like is the, 5.25% dividend, which I kind of like.
Yeah, that's the most attractive thing about Ford. Ford's a good company. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with Ford. I always had a problem with car companies because they always carried a lot of debt and they paid a high dividend. And that always bothered me why do you have all this debt and pay a dividend? Because you're paying for the debt and you're paying it, like turning around that money and just giving it back to us, me and you as a shareholders. But that's what car companies do. I mean, you just have to accept it.
Yeah. I don't see much potential probably for capital gains there.
Not a lot.
Maybe a few dollars probably.
Yeah, you want to buy Ford because of that dividend, and I think you're right. You want to buy in this area around $11, and for everybody else, it's selling for $11.11 today. Has lots of debt. It's got a very good cash flow, almost $4 a share. They're going to make $1.59 this year and $1.67 per share next year, and you know that's what you expect from a big car company. Not a lot of growth. PE is really low. I mean,
do you think $11 would be a good entry point?
I do, because
if I can get it.
Yeah, if you can get it, I think that's a good point. That's a good part. Yeah, could it go down further? Of course it could. But that looks like a pretty good entry point to me. And if you hold on to it long enough, you'll make plenty of money.
Yeah, well, I would hold on to it for minimum a year.
Yeah, and I do like the fact that insiders are buying.
I'm a long-term guy.
Yeah, insiders are buying right now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to ask you one more, unless you've got a lineup.
I do. If you could call back tomorrow, I'll be happy to answer.
Sure, you bet. That's fine.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Oscar in San Jose. How you doing, Oscar?
I'm doing great, Steve. Awesome show. I love it.
Thank you.
Hey, I just had a question regarding an old employer. I got a annuity. And after this month, I'm able to roll it over. I was hoping to roll it over to a Roth IRA.
Okay, is it a regular 401k, not a Roth 401k, and the old employer?
That I want to roll it over to?
No, where it's coming from.
It's coming from an annuity.
An annuity, but was it a 401k, inside a 401k, or 457, or, see, an annuity... Go ahead.
I think it was a 401k. Yes.
Okay. Then you can you can roll it over to a regular IRA with no tax issue. Excuse me. But if you roll it over to a Roth IRA, they're going to have you pay income tax on whatever money it is on the rollover. Let's say it's $20,000. That'll be $20,000 income to you that you're going to pay income tax on.
Okay, so it'd be better to go just a regular Roth IRA.
A regular IRA, not a Roth. Then you would not have to pay any taxes. Now, if you're unemployed and not going to make any money this year, then maybe you should roll it over to a Roth because you won't have much income, and therefore you don't have to pay a lot of taxes. But if you don't really want to add to your tax burden if you can avoid it, I probably would roll it over to a regular IRA. So I wouldn't have to pay taxes on it.
One more question. So if I roll it over to a regular IRA, and I believe the max is $5,500 per year.
Yeah.
So if I roll it over this year, I won't be able to contribute on top of that?
No. Yes, you will. That's not a contribution to your retirement account. It's just a rollover from point A to point B, and it's not an addition to anything. And how old are you, Oscar?
35.
Okay, yeah. So when you hit 50, there's a catch up for $1,000 more, but you're not there. So, yeah, you still can add to it this year.
Awesome.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate all your help.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Oscar. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, first 100 days for the new president. First 100 days for any new president, how's the stock market stack up compared to other presidencies? And how's he done? Well, since his, not quite 100 days, by the way, but it's getting close. Dow's up 3.6%. The S&P is up 3.6%, 3.59. And since that's from his inauguration day, from his win, which was November, the market is up 11.6 for the Dow and 9.6 for the S&P. But that's eighth best. There was other presidents' first 100 days a lot better. Roosevelt, up 86% in 1933. Remember how far the market crashed first. But Roosevelt also has a worse year, by the way, after election, down 11% in 1941. But 86% in 1933. Okay, then, which is pretty huge. Then, and by the way, then when he was reelected in 1945, that year, he was up 10 for Roosevelt, 10.4. So he has first and second place, by the way. Kennedy was up 8.9% in 1961. Obama up 8.3% in 2009. Remember coming out of that recession? Bush 8.3% in 1989. Eisenhower in 1957 up 3.65%. And then Trump, first 100 days. Remember, he's at 3.65%. That's how that stacks up, isn't it? Now, absolutely means nothing to the market. First 100 days of presidency is meaningless. They can't do anything to affect anything except talk. Nothing affects it. You know, they talk about what they're going to do. And then, of course, whatever they talk about, the market probably will react to it. But long term means absolutely nothing. We have an InvestTalk Wealth webinar coming up this month, everybody. This one is aimed at the hands-on investor, the person like who wants to buy and sell and learn how to do it. You want to sharpen your analytical skills, your fundamental and technical skills, chart reading. Back to basics is what we're calling it. Back to basics, fundamental and technical analysis, back to basics. Justin will be hosting this along with another KPP financial advisor, Jason Toper in our office. So Justin Klein, Jason Toper, not me. They're going to be hosting it. The date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m. Fundamental and technical analysis. What metrics matter most? How to screen for attractive stocks? How to identify chart patterns in today's market? It's an hour webinar. It's free. But you do need to sign up. We had a little problem with the sign up the other day or two. But it's worked out now. So register is now open at investtalk.com. So why not sign up right now? Again, it's free, and the date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m.
If you live near San Ramon in Northern California, Steve will be there April 25th for individual retirement reviews. And if you're not near our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. It's easy to sign up. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Hey, guys. It's Woody from Hartwell, Georgia, podcast listener. Love your show. Got a couple of questions. I need to add some financials to my portfolio and come up with a couple. SunTrust, STI, and Wells Fargo, WFC. I wondered if you guys could shed some light on those two for me. Looks like the SunTrust has taken a little dip here recently and missed it at 45. But if you could, just give me your thoughts on it. Thanks.
Yeah, the big banks are hitting some headwinds since the 1st of March. And SunTrust is one of them, STI. It's a $26 billion bank, so it's pretty big. Holding company for SunTrust Bank, operating via 1,367 offices in Florida, Georgia, Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. They're making good, solid money, okay? 2016, they made $3.55 a share. This year, they're going to make $3.88. Next year, they're going to make $4.39. So a good, solid company. Good, solid company. Yield is 1.9% dividend yield, which is not very good. That's pretty low. The issue you have is all these big banks. Do you remember we talked about them? I talked about them and I said, well, I'm not big in favor of big banks. And all last year, I don't like big banks. I'm not big banks. Until the election. When I switched, and I said so on the radio here, when Trump got elected, I said, you know what? That's probably going to help big banks a lot because he's talking about reducing paperwork and getting rid of some of those onerous owner's regulations, and that's all good for big banks. So they had a big move from the election up until March 1st. Now they're falling back. They got overpriced. It's as simple as that. They got overpriced. Here you're looking at SunTrust. It has a current PE of 15. Now you're saying, well, that's not that expensive. That's the average market PE. Yeah. But for SunTrust, the range PE is 9 to 18 the last 5 years. So it's pretty much at its high of that range. So you'd let it fall back. I'm thinking it might go down to like a $49 area. I would love for it to go down to about 46, 47, but I don't think it will do that. So about 50 bucks. It's at 53.45 right now. So another, what, 7, 8% down? I'd be patient and wait till you see. These banks have not bottomed out yet. They're still in a downward trend. And SunTrust is the same as Wells Fargo. SunTrust is a little bit weaker than Wells Fargo, but I would wait. Be patient. Don't jump into them yet. 888-99-CHART. Okay, the stock market is stuck, right? We all know that. From March 1st to now, I think it's down 2%. But it's like watching paint dry, slowly falling, leaking downward. What will change this? What's going to change this? We're talking about a month and a half now. I mean, and nothing's happening. I mean, nothing seems to drive the market. You know, bombing Syria didn't seem to work. Earnings that we're in the middle of earnings season. Does anybody even know that? No one's even talking about earnings season. That's not working. Something dramatic, more dramatic, has to happen, because the few dramatic things we have had happen has caused nothing, you know, to happen to the market. So what is it that will drive it? I think we have to look toward, I mean, Obamacare didn't get overturned. We don't have, where's the tax break? We haven't seen it. I mean, nothing is driving it up or down. So I think what you need to do is we probably need a big surprise. If we're going to have the market go up, a big surprise on economic growth. The numbers have to look dramatically better all of a sudden. Whatever it is, industrial production, I don't care where it comes from, but it has to be something. Retail sales have to jump up big, by the way, that is one of these things. Something dramatic has to happen. Now, the problem is that something dramatic could be bad, too. And we call that a black swan event, where you don't know what it is, but it could happen. But it's not one of these two things is going to happen. It has to be big. You're listening to Invest Talk. Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. I had an email question come in from Paul. Hi, Steve. You retired at 43. I'm 43 next week and want to retire very early. I'm an engineer. How much money do I need to retire very early? Is a pot of 30 times annual outgoing enough? 30 times your income is enough to retire. In other words, let's say you make $100,000 a year and you want to retire. Well, you need to have, if you had 30 times that $100,000, that's what, $3 million. Okay. If you can live off 4% of that $3 million, that's $120,000 a year. That's more than you're making now. And if you only live off 4%, you can probably grow the money to stay ahead of inflation. So in a real quick, easy math kind of thing, 30 times your salary is great. That's pretty hard to do for most people, but that would be great. You could easily live comfortably with that. Okay. Now he says 30 times annual outgoings. I guess he mean expenses? Well, if your expenses match your income, which many people do, then yeah, the answer is yes. Okay. Let's see if we can answer this question from Mike in Santa Maria.
Hi, I had a question regarding zero coupon bonds and how they fit into a long-term investment strategy. I love your show and thanks for the info.
Okay, does everybody know what a zero coupon bond is? Okay, I'll describe how they work. Zero coupon bonds is a bond that you buy today at discount. In other words, let's say you're buying a $25,000 bond over 10 years, and it pays you a certain percentage, I don't know, 3, 4, 5%, whatever it is. What happens is they take that $25,000 is what it is worth at maturity, $25,000. Today, you buy that bond at $11,000, some kind of lower figure. And over the years, you make your percent income, whatever the yield is from that bond. So every year, that bond goes up in value. Until the 10th year, then you get your $25,000 back. What is good? What's bad about them? The thing I don't like about them is you never get the money. You never get that yield. In other words, it doesn't come into you. It just, the bond value just increases in value. Until at the maturity date, then you get the $25,000. But over the years, you don't get it. It's just computed. But it is imputed to you as income, and you may have to pay income tax on it, depending on what kind of bond it is. Is it a corporate zero coupon bond? Is it a federal coupon bond? Is it a state zero coupon bond? Who that determines what the tax consequences are. So that's the negative. There's nothing wrong with them. Just like any other bond, make sure the quality of the issuer is there. You like high quality stuff. Okay? Appreciate the call. Thank you. Five things that prove rich people are cheap. Now, unfortunately, I probably meet in some of these things. Anyways, if you make $250,000 more a year in income, did you know that most people that make $250,000 or more in income drive a Ford F-Series truck? It's the most popular. So you know that if they have a Ford F-Series truck and they're making over $250,000, well, you know, the Jeep is number two. So 50% of rich people use non-luxury cars. I kind of fit in that. I don't know if I call myself rich, though. See, maybe that's what it is. One in five who make over $100,000 a year shop at a dollar store. Okay, well, Mom, I kind of shop at a dollar store every so often. I'm in trouble. About coupons, people earning over 100K are more likely to use coupons than people making under 100K. Okay, I don't use coupons. Okay, so good. I guess I don't feel that. And the last one. People who make between $50,000 and $75,000 a year give 7.6% of their money to charity, while people over $100,000 only give 4.2% to charity. Isn't that interesting? Where do you fit? Looks like we're done for this hour. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com. and click on the Contact Steve button. I will get back to you. I'm pretty good about it. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thanks for being with us today. And let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.